This is not a rehearsal. It's not a performance either, but these singers are belting out the tunes. The Bay Area Sacred Harp Group usually meets in Berkeley, but today there are about 60 people crammed in a small wooden room at the Potrero Hill neighborhood house in San Francisco. They're sitting around a hollow square where each side represents a voice in a four-part harmony: bass, tenor, alto, and treble.
What is Sacred Harp?
That's Hannah Blair, an artist from San Francisco.
I have been working on a short explanation of this, actually, ever since I got this tattoo.
She points to the notes of a hymn called Africa, tattooed on her left arm. It's written in shape notes, rectangles, diamonds, and triangles.
And realized the very next day that I was going to spend the rest of my life explaining Sacred Harp to people.
Sacred Harp is one of the oldest forms of American folk music. It was developed in the churches of New England 200 years ago. The brash singing style quickly died out as music scholars of the day dismissed it as too crude for church. The tradition eventually took root in the rural South, where it is still sung to this day. Since the 1980s, Sacred Harp has experienced what some call an urban revival in cities all over the country. But even as the music catches on with a new generation of singers, Blair still finds it hard to explain its appeal without adding a few disclaimers.
You know, I'm not religious, and it's, you know, San Francisco. We sing in church, you know, but like it's just in a church. It's not like at church, but I do feel sometimes like it's a bit of a guilty pleasure in San Francisco.
It's a guilty pleasure because the words are steeped in evangelical Christian theology.
Well, the words are a stumbling block for a lot of people when they start singing the music.
That's Dan Harper. He's a minister at the Unitarian Church in Palo Alto. He says even if you have a problem with the religious lyrics of Sacred Harp, that doesn't have to stop you from singing it.
So there's a lot of people who sing all kinds of music and they have no interest in the words at all, but they just like the music. So you think about a lot of the American standards right out of the American Songbook, and the words are totally meaningless. I mean, Moonlight Over Vermont, who the hell cares about Moonlight Over Vermont? But we sing it because it's a wonderful song. So I think a lot of people approach Sacred Harp music that way, is you don't worry too much about the words.
And the singing itself can be a hard sell. Sacred Harp is loud. The harmonies are unusual and not quite in tune. But music lovers of all walks of life are finding ways to relate to the 200-year-old tradition. Blair says the first time she attended the weekly singing in Berkeley, it took her back to her past when she was in a metal band.
We were a really noisy band. I did a lot of screaming, and there was something as different as being in the band was from Sacred Harp. There was something equally physical about Sacred Harp, you know, singing as loud as I could and running out of air in a lot of the songs. And then just the experience of making music with a bunch of people who were also really excited to be there. And it was a really intense experience to have with a bunch of strangers.
It's an intense experience for Harper too, but for a different reason.
It's partly because anybody can do it. My friends who are into punk rock are all over it, because then I just tell them it's all about do-it-yourself music, and that gets a lot of people too.
Like in punk rock, you don't have to be classically trained or be exactly on pitch to sing Sacred Harp songs. They're written in shape notes, a notation system that was designed to be easier to sight read so that anyone can pick it up and sing.
So we have four notes there. You have the triangle is fa.
Cassie Allen is a singer from Rome, Texas.
And you can say it fa or fa, either way. People sing it both ways. They kind of do a fa.
She's conducting a singing school for an enthusiastic Bay Area crowd.
Fa. That's how the old people did it.
Singing schools are part of the inclusive tradition of Sacred Harp and shape note singing. Their purpose was to teach congregations to sight sing so every member could take part in the service.
Part of Sacred Harp singing is blending. We don't care how loud you sing, really. We don't care if you sing off tune. But most of the time when you break up in parts like that, you tend to try to blend together.
Sacred Harp is sung in four-part dispersed harmony. That means every vocal line can exist independently from one another, but when sung together, they create a unique texture of voices. As Alan explains, Sacred Harp is ultimately a communal experience. That's why it's about blending all these different voices together. She says it's not about how you sing. And Hannah Blair says it's also not about what you believe.
Part of the tradition is that it doesn't matter what your politics are, what your beliefs are, who you are, what you're doing. It's rare that you find a group that all you have to do is want to be a member. And you are.
Maybe that's why the Sacred Harp tradition travels so well outside of its southern home. It welcomes anyone who wants to do it. Blair says that she will always be a part of a larger community, no matter where a singing takes place. The rough sound and the religious tone might take newcomers some getting used to, but the experience of singing loudly in four-part harmony with a bunch of people is hard to resist. For Cross Currents, I'm Shani Aviram.